This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Passing the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, has meant many things over the last 5 years, but it did not end the debate over health care in the United States. Ed Weisbart declared in 2012 that Obamacare would improve the lives of millions of Americans, but that more would be needed to solve the crisis. Weisbart is chairman of the Missouri chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. He was in Kalamazoo last week to speak with physicians and also came by our studio to discuss health care reform. Ed Weisbart, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's start with, first of all, what you see as the things that the Affordable Care Act does, which are beneficial to Americans by and large.
I think the Affordable Care Act does a lot of things beneficially to Americans. It's the first time we've ever had a legislative commitment to giving all Americans access to quality, affordable health care. We've never even had that commitment before. We didn't achieve it with the Affordable Care Act, but we have a commitment to it. It's provided millions of Americans with some form of insurance. If you live in a state like Michigan, where Medicaid has been expanded, it's helped many of them. And I think it's pretty clear that many lives are going to be saved by what it did. The problem, of course, is that it didn't go nearly far enough.
What would go far enough, in your opinion?
Well, the biggest flaw with the Affordable Care Act was that it was written by and incredibly supportive of the insurance industry. And the insurance industry siphons off a quarter to a third of what we spend on health care. As compared to other systems around the world and even here in the United States, Medicare has about a 2% overhead. The insurance industry, by their SEC filings, has about an 18% overhead. So that money is just being diverted and wasted, in my mind. And instead, what we should do is improve the problems we have with Medicare today. And there are many, so we should improve them. We know what they are. And then expand that so that all Americans, including the president, the governor, you, me, all Americans would have access to this improved form of Medicare.
I suppose there are people that are going to hear the idea of a single-payer system, and they think that is a government takeover of healthcare, and that there will not be competition amongst providers to try and deliver the best service at the lowest cost. Is that fair?
I can understand that, but that's really not the way I would characterize this at all. As a matter of fact, today, physicians and hospitals are competing to get the right mix of insurance companies in their panel, and not really competing as much to have patients be in their panel, somewhat, of course. But today, we have the illusion that we have a free market of insurance companies. We don't really. Employers typically pick those. We have few of them. And then insurance companies decide which physicians and hospitals are things we can use. On the other hand, under the model I'm proposing, and Medicare, basically, every physician, virtually every physician, would be in the network. There wouldn't be this concept of networks. And instead, what we would actually do with this system is unleash the free market into the delivery side of healthcare. This is actually a very free market solution. I, as a physician, would be unfettered by choices of insurance, and instead I would be doing my best to make sure that you want to be in my practice, which is what we do today, but even more so when you put the free market really into healthcare.
Explain that a little more, because I think people, when they hear single payer, they just think, well, Dr. Ed Weisbart's going to administer service to me, and then he knows that the federal government's going to pick up the check. So, you know, if you know the federal government's going to pick up the check, you might be willing to do more. I might be willing to pursue more treatment if I assume that bill's going to be paid by someone else and if you know it's going to be paid. How does the free market work into this idea?
Sure. The free market is fundamental to this concept and the way that we're talking about. So, I would be reimbursed by the federal government, that's true, for the visits, exactly as I am today for my traditional Medicare patients. So, but there would be one program for that, and I would be interested in trying to have as many of my patients happy with that as I could. The free market would enable me to compete against others. Today, you know, insurance companies see a 20 to 25% turnover in their members every year, which means that because people change insurance, they change jobs, their employer changes what they offer. So today, I see 20 or 25% of my patients leave me every year because they come up and say, you know, gee, doc, I like seeing you, but this is our last visit because my employer changed insurance companies. Well, if they don't like me, if they don't want to see me, if they think I'm not giving them the care and access and service and whatever that they feel they need, of course they should leave. But if they're just leaving me because their insurance changed. Well, that's not freedom. That's not a free market. And this would solve that problem.
You had dueling op-eds with Sally Pipes, who's president and CEO of the Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Policy for the Pacific Research Institute, on the very issue of single-payer healthcare. She pushed back a little bit on the idea of the administrative costs for Medicare and Medicaid, saying that the IRS gathers taxes to help pay for Medicare. Social Security Administration collects premiums. Department of Health and Human Services manages accounting. In other words, those things go into other parts of the government budget that a healthcare system does have to account for, especially when we're talking about a private health insurance, which does have to, you know, collect money, those sort of things. Does she have a point on that administrative cost issue?
She does, but it's a pretty small point. When you look at that overall, still, the overhead of Medicare, if you add in all of the so-called hidden costs, it's reported at 2%. Perhaps it's maybe as high as 3%. And you could maybe even argue that it should be higher so that they could do more on fraud and detection, and maybe it would be up to 4% if you went there. But that's nowhere near the SEC reportings of the private insurance industries. As you know, the ACA requires that the private insurance industries keep their overhead down to no more than 15% to 20%. And they look like they did that. But if you actually look at their SEC filings rather than their HHS filings, if you look at the SEC filings, we've made no progress in that. And that money could more than supply the need that we have to provide health care to all Americans.
You mentioned fraud. Mm-hmm. What are some other problems? Because you also said that we do have some problems to address with Medicare. In addition to fraud, what are the other ones that you see that should be addressed before or in conjunction with starting a single-payer system?
Yeah, they fall into two categories, really. The one is that the benefit design under Medicare today is antiquated. So Medicare, was passed in 1965, and it's had a few revisions since then. But there are still gaps in the benefits that you can get through Medicare. For example, it doesn't pay for a nutritionist. So if I have a diabetic, I can get them to see an ophthalmologist and a cardiologist, but I can't get them an hour with a nutritionist. So there are some gaps in the benefit design that have to be fixed. And then there are significant and sometimes really onerous financial barriers within traditional Medicare. So people sometimes have large copays or deductibles. And as a result of those two problems, the benefit design and the financial barriers, most seniors who can afford to will purchase or are purchasing a supplement or a wrap to fix those two problems. So under what we're proposing, we would have to improve those things, create a more current benefit design, and essentially eliminate the financial barriers. And if you did those two types of improvements, there would no longer be a need for seniors or any of us to go out and purchase a supplement or a wrap.
You note in your op-ed that physicians, by and large, according to polling that you have found, they support the idea of a single-payer system. Why are physicians on board?
Well, physicians are on board for a number of reasons. The first and most important, of course, is that physicians are dedicated to their patients, want to do the right thing, very much want their patients to have access to the health care they need, and are incredibly frustrated when we see someone who needs something and they say, well, I have to wait. I can't get it. I saw somebody, a 64-year-old, with warning signs of a stroke. It was really obvious this was an impending problem. And I said, well, you need to go get imaging. You need to get tests to find out if you're going to have a stroke, and then we would need to do surgery to prevent this. And she said, well, I don't have adequate insurance. That would be very expensive. I'm going to choose to pray and wait until I turn 65 and have Medicare, and then I'll go for those things. And in this particular case, as it turned out, that strategy worked, and she did have a large blockage that we discovered, you know, the 6 months or so later, and she had it fixed. But it just drives me crazy, as it does all physicians, to see somebody with a problem right in our hands that we know what we could do to help them and not be able to. So that's the first thing, is physicians really, really want to do the right thing and feel financially impeded by the current system. Another reason physicians like this is most of us are focused on the cost of malpractice, and this would almost eliminate that concern. American physicians are the only ones in the world that actually have tort reform is something high on their agenda. Physicians in Canada pay around $3,000 a year for malpractice. Family physicians in the United States pay around $12,000. And the reason for that is that most people who sue their doctor do it because they had a bad outcome, be that for something we did or not is immaterial, but they had a bad outcome and they're worried about who's going to pay for the future cost of their health care. Under this system, the future cost of their health care is a utility that we all have access to, and that goes away. So the reason to sue goes down. The frequency, we're still a litigious society, but the frequency of lawsuits would plummet under this, and the judgment, the biggest percentage of the judgment when we're found adversely is to pay for the future cost of medical care. So if you eliminate much of the reason and if you eliminate much of the judgment, the finding, our malpractice and our overhead goes down. Physicians today pay $84,000 a year on staff to just manage the relationship with the insurance industry. So physicians in the family physicians I have data on in the United States pay typically 55% overhead on every dollar they bring in. Family physicians in Canada have roughly 25% overhead.
I have a brother-in-law who's a nurse anesthetist, so he deals with a lot of these issues himself. Many of the people he works with worry about any sort of healthcare reform, including single payer, meaning that they're not going to make as much money. And they will say, look, I went through medical school, I took out some big loans, I got to pay those back. I played under these rules, understanding it was going to work this way, and they worry that they may not be making as much money down the line. Do they have reason to worry under a single-payer system about how much they'll make in the medical field?
Well, any possible issue is something we should be thinking about, so it's not unreasonable to be thinking about that. But we have to understand that we need people to be doing this work, and in other nations that have done these sorts of transformations, that is not a problem. It's well managed. The budgeting for this can be administered in a way that protects people. The people who are probably most worried about this financially are the people working within the insurance industry. And there would be displacement of them because the need for this would change, obviously. But we have to understand the people working within the insurance industry are often really bright, compassionate, hardworking, dedicated people in fairly crummy jobs. Not all of them, but they're not the best jobs. And by that, I mean they have roughly a 25% annual turnover. So no matter what you do today, half of them are already going to not be in that job 2 years from now. And under the bill that we're talking about, which is H.R. 676, sponsored by John Conyers here in Michigan, and 60
every,
others.
Every 2 years, I believe, he sponsors the same thing. Yeah.
Yes, and he's going to do it again. So under that bill, anybody who was displaced by this would have a guarantee of up to $100,000 income for the next 2 years after the bill is passed, and then be eligible for unemployment, and of course be getting retrained in all of this, because we'd need those folks to be involved in all the public health things that we need to start doing.
But you bring up another interesting point here, which is the cost of doing this. I think there was a conservative commentator once who said, if you think healthcare is expensive now, wait till it's free. And if we're also talking about, you know, subsidizing the people in the insurance industry who would be displaced, that does sound like it's going to be a pretty big price tag after a while. Can we afford it?
We can't afford not to do this. Two recent articles in the mainstream press, one in the USA Today about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, and one in the Wall Street Journal a week before that, that talked about how expensive a single-payer model would be. And the numbers they quoted, I believe, are true, but they only looked at the new cost side of things. Of course, there would be new costs to what I'm talking about. If you pay for uninsured folks to get health care, that's going to cost something. If everybody with insurance has better benefit designs, they're going to start going to the dentist and going to get glasses and getting home care and things. They're going to start doing things. There is, of course, a new cost. But the savings from this are so much bigger. There have been maybe a dozen economic analyses, and they vary with what they assume and how they bucket and model it. The least favorable shows it as break-even, and virtually every one of them shows significant, if not dramatic, financial savings to the country. And that's money that can go into the infrastructure or wherever we choose to put it that's being squandered today on, frankly, the profit of the insurance industry. Why don't we have high-speed rail today? Why don't we have any of the things that are letting us fall further and further behind globally? Why are our businesses having to be straddled with the cost of healthcare, whereas businesses around the world are not in that situation? The problem we've created undermines American business ability to compete globally. And they're seeing, right now they're getting their premium increases, they're in the mail right now, they're seeing double-digit and 20% increases in what they have to pay to insure their employees. That's just unsupportable, and it diminishes our ability to compete as a nation.
Ed Weisbart, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Ed Weisbart is chairman of the Missouri chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. We spoke last week when he was in Kalamazoo to address a meeting of physicians. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.